Kangaroo Audio.
If you enjoy the stories on this podcast, you'll also like the stories in my book, Filmmaking Confidential, which isn't just for filmmakers, but also all artists and really any entrepreneur. Thank you for supporting the show and sharing it with your friends. Now here's today's show. I'm Steve Balderson, and you're listening to the Filmmaking Confidential podcast. In this podcast, we meet with filmmakers, writers, actors, artists, and other notables. Today's guest is magician mentalist Felix Jones. Felix Jones is a member of the International Brotherhood of Magicians and a magician member of the Academy of Magical Arts, and is a regular performer in the Magic Castle showrooms of Hollywood, California, where he performs his acclaimed comedy magic and mind reading show. Felix unlocks everyone's inner magical self in his fast-paced, funny, and mystifying show that will leave you wondering, how did he do that?
I don't want to be pegged in the category of just mentalism. So when I first started, I was just purely doing mentalism, and I found that that was limiting my my abilities, but also my capabilities of being hired. So I then started working with some world-class magicians in developing magic that had mentalism to it, but it was magic, more illusion-based, a little bit of sleight of hand. What you saw was a show that some new material that I'm it was purely mentalism, I think, what you saw. But I am doing, you know, in that particular venue, we can only perform for 20 minutes. And I have a full 45-minute show. But what I do is that I shuffle through my material when I'm performing down in the cellar. And I usually balance it with things that are mentalism and things that are magic-y mentalism.
Sure. Well, would you say that doing magic is more or less theatrical?
It's incredibly theatrical. And this is, I think, I came from a many, many years theater background. I was a writer, director, producer, very short time as an actor for years. And then I rediscovered magic, and I decided to turn all of that towards my own material and how I walk and stalk a stage. I think it's greatly missing from a lot of magicians. Some guys just kind of stand there and do their act. Card magicians, very, very few have a theatrical flair. But I pride myself in that what I do is that I am producing a self show that's got music. Everything is, you heard a lot of music. You saw what I do with the music. Every move I take has been choreographed. It sounds very, what do I want to say? Not stiff, but kind of confining, but it's not, because what happens then is that I have to be always stay true to the script, stay true to what I'm doing in case one audience member throws me for a loop. Now, that happens many times, and I then allow myself to ad lib and have fun with them. And, you know, always trying to loosen people up during my show to make sure that, because, you know, I present myself in a certain way when I first make my entrance. Mm-hmm. And then in about 5 minutes, I break that all apart with the song and dance routine. And that's totally intentional. But that's how I get people to go along with me, and certainly the two people I pull up to dance with me, and it kind of loosens everybody's hair. So, you know, it's all designed to do that. So, you know, my entrance is different from what I then break the expectations. And as I said, I get often thrown by audience reactions. Sometimes they're shy. Sometimes they're, they swear their heads off because of what's happened to them. One of my favorite, I was in the parlor of prestidigitation at the castle in November, the Thanksgiving week, and it was jam-packed. We were full, and I was doing three shows a night. And one of my favorite, it was videoed two or three times, I believe, and one night I did the reveal for this woman, and I don't know if I can say this on your podcast.
Yeah, you can. You can say whatever you want.
Okay. When I showed her what I had drawn, which was a duplicate of what she had drawn, she looked at me. She went, her eyes were enormous, and she said, "Fuck you. I was exactly thinking that. I was watching Sweeney Todd in preparation to get here." She's a theater person. I said she was, you know, I see her performing in Sweeney Todd. So it was a hit. It was a hit. And she just lost it. And everyone was howling. Absolutely howling. And that's one of my favorite moments. Another time is that there is a phrase, I'd never heard this before. It's called Taken Back Sundays. And I had never heard this phrase before. And so I was trying to capture it by a drawing. So all I could do was I drew a calendar and circled Sunday. And the woman just doubled up, screaming and howling. She couldn't believe that I had got that. And I was like, so what does that mean? And she was a beautiful Black lady. And I guess it had special meaning for just like kind of kicking back on Sundays. And, you know, it's they're your own day to have fun. But so at that point, I just go along with it. And sometimes the show goes a little bit longer than the entertainment director likes because I'm having such a good time with people.
How do you do it? I mean, you don't have to give away any secrets, but how could you explain to a listener who has not yet seen you perform or somebody else perform something like this, what is happening?
Oh, wow. That's tough to do without any kind of video, you know?
It is, so what I is, know.
What is happening? So what is happening is that the various routines that I do, I am asking people to think of something, think of an image. This is many of the routines that I do, is to really think of an image. And that image is placed in their mind. And through, I can only say like a couple of cues, you know, from my own part, I'm able to say what they're thinking of. I tend to not use the old time mentalist effects. So there's mentalists out there who are still doing things with pieces of paper and envelopes. And I can't go into detail, of course, but things that have been around in mentalism since the 1920s. And my work, I take a cue from that, but I really wanted to devise methods now that are current. I use no electronics. There are some mentalists that use electronics. I use nothing because electronics fail, particularly in the confines of the Magic Castle. Wireless is all wonky there. So everything I do is from talking with the audience member and finding ways during the actual mechanics of the routine and making it completely undetectable of the particular thought that they are thinking of.
Cool.
I'm being very vague because I have to.
No, I know you are. And it's good. I mean, you totally do. I studied a little bit of Ericksonian hypnosis and NLP, you know, with just the idea of 55% of our communication is physiology and 38% is tonality. And only 7% are those words, right? And how much the body is, you know, actually speaking when they're not saying anything, right? And I feel like there's such an art to that. But I also want to circle back with the idea of what you do theatrically, you know, the persona of Felix Jones, you know, the performer Felix Jones, who's also a mentalist, right?
Yeah.
When you're crafting the show or whatever it's going to be. And you're, yeah. Are you working with people or is it just you coming up?
I'm going to be performing with Simone Turkington, February 11th, 12th and 13th in the Peller Theater at the Magic Castle. But mostly I perform solo. So the Peller Theater is specifically a showroom that is dedicated to duos. And I have performed there 3 times before with another magician. And it was, again, a mini produced show. And so the show that Simone and I are doing is also, you know, a 40 to 45 minute show with some new effects that, we're doing something that I am pretty sure no one has done before. It's something called the Spear Cabinet, which there are famous versions of the Spear Cabinet. Glenn Falkenstein and Francis Willard are the most famous. Michael Ammar and his wife do a version of their Spear Cabinet. So what we're doing is we're reversing genders. And I'm the one who gets all tied up and is locked inside the Spear Cabinet. So that's never done with a man, ever, ever, ever. Cool. So it's a new thrust with it. So back to your question is, for both, whether I'm working solo or with a duo, it always starts with the script and what the script is going to be. Because when you're a mentalist, actually, it's all magicians. Words are selected very carefully because you want people to remember, because they're getting a lot of information thrown at them visually as well as verbally. And you have to be very specific, or I have to be very specific about words and the effect that my words have. Now, because of my character speaks in that, when I'm on stage is speaking in that, what's it called? They used to talk like that in the movies in the 30s and 40s. I forgot what it's called. It's a particular dialect, like it's not from New York, but it'll come to me after the podcast, of course, but it's a famous way. It's a famous way that, you know, actors were told to speak in the 30s and 40s. So for example, the word girl, and you'll recognize this meaning, it comes out Gail. Mm. And, you know, you look at those old movies and then, you know, like, what's the one with Rosalind Russell and Joan Crawford, and, you know, they're all Gales. Everybody's a Gail. And, you know, my thing is I take a cue from Noel Coward, and I use, darling. Now I do speak with a little bit of an English accent. In fact, when I'm performing, in fact, I've actually had English people come up to me and ask me where I'm from.
I love that.
Me too, because I'm thinking, is it that good? Is it that deceptive? I don't know. I think it's also my affectation when I'm doing, calling everyone darling, darling, this, oh, darling. You know, it makes it conspiratorial. And one of the reasons that I'm doing it is like Noel Coward. Noel Coward could not remember people's names. And so there'll be times when people, I'll introduce them to the audience and I'm like forgetting the name. So I just like go, darling, it could be male or female, doesn't matter. They're all darling to me. And so, you know, that theatricality forms what I do and what I write. So my vocabulary is very specific. I am using a little bit of heightened vocabulary. You know, when I'm going through my script, I'm always choosing words that are not often used. But this character, I believe, is like from the 70s, about the 70s, I think, 1970s. And today, so somewhat sort of modern and a little bit older. So it always starts with the script. At the same time, I'm also working on the magic. So I look for material that is absolutely specific to my character. It means maybe some new things, maybe some older things, maybe a combination. The effect I believe you saw with the index cards, mm-hmm. right? That's a combination of two different methods. One is by Colin Cloud, a wonderful mentalist that I highly recommend listeners see. He's doing a show with Chin Lim in Las Vegas. Another one is that I devised that is part of my what's called a Q&A act in having people that me choose people who have answered a question in a particular way. So it's combining two things. So it's the magic and the words all come together. They have to work off of each other. And so when I'm going through a script, when I'm working on a new trick, I work on the magic, work on the magic, work on the magic. And then I start doing a script and I start talking it and I'm walking through and talking the script. So they're completely integrated. And then the third element is music. This is a cue that I get from Jeff McBride. So Jeff is a world famous magician, a very close friend of mine. He has his mystery and magic school in Las Vegas. And he's taught thousands of performers. And he is a very musical show, whether or not it's a lower key effect or if it's a big blasting illusion thing. So that's where I take my cue from. And I think music really amplifies my script and my magic. And so I listen to music, various things. I try to get some new music and I listen to it over and over and over. And then I get the rhythm of that music and how my magic can be performed to that music. So those three are all, it's all very complex. You know, it's not just like picking up some cards.
You know? No, exactly.
It's very, it's integrated.
Well, and do you think that you're past with the theater in general has informed that, or would you have naturally gone this direction anyway?
That's a great question. You know, I am working with actors and directors, you know, the words that they say have to be integral with the characters that they are developing. I mean, there is some similarity, but honestly, I think my theater background does inform what I'm doing and I call upon that background, but I'm feeling it's different. I'm feeling that the way that I'm working all three elements is different from what I did in my theater work. My theater work is certainly a part of it. It's certainly, you know, it's a part of me. And I guess it's my training for, you know, perfection. It's just, and in magic, you can't be perfect ever, because you're working with people. You're working with people and anything can happen, anything at all. So it's never perfect, but it can be almost perfect. And at least I go out there striving to be almost perfect and with my mind open, but something's going to happen. Whether I drop in a card, which is, you know, easy to do. You know, or someone reveals the reveal before I wanted them to reveal it, which actually happened last weekend. That's again my fault, because I have to give them the words to say, just respond with your face, not with your voice. And I didn't do that. So one of the big complaints about mentalism is that it's not visual enough. That really is a constant complaint. And the director of entertainment for a while was really, you know, wanted more mentalism, but he did feel that that mentalists weren't coming up with anything that people could see besides just the hearing and the thinking. So that was another part of the material that I present, is that it has to be visual, that everybody in the audience can see something big that's happening. And so that bigness also plays into my character. I do not have a demure character by any means. And, you know, I like to say, when I burst through those curtains, you know, behind the curtain, I always have like a little butterfly of nervousness. And then I burst through and then that's all gone, because I am so big. And, you know, my magic is big, but that's again intentional, so that I can pull it back for a smaller space and then just play it big for a larger space. But it has to be visual. You know, all magic has to be visual. It can't just be thinking, and it can't just be little tiny props that people can't see. So, you know, the reveal with the cutting trick that I did. Oh, wait, you didn't see that.
No, I did it that night. Yeah,
I wasn't sure if I did it. Oh, okay. So, you know what I'm talking about. And that reveal, it's kind of small. It's about, you know, playing card size. But if I want to get it to the back of the house to see it, I've got to run up there and show them. And so that was, you know, a big, when I was playing in the parlor, when I'm going to be doing in the Peller, I run up the aisles and make sure every single person sees what that reveal is. In your space, I couldn't do it as much. But again, what I do, the theater of presenting it, I don't say that I matched the celebrity that she drew. I show it first to the person. And then I hold it out in a slow arc so everybody can see, and move over here, making sure everybody can see it. And then we say, you know, who the person was. But it's just the drama. It's like this kind of tension. People don't know. They just see her response. And then they all see it. And then they all have that same response. And for me to watch that same response that the person just had, is wonderful. It makes my performance why I do it.
What other things? What other experiences do you have that just fulfill you in that way?
I get asked this question quite a bit. So I really love what I'm doing. I have great joy in what I do. And, you know, when I'm doing that song and dance to Fireball XL5, which, by the way, right now has over 20,000 views on my YouTube channel.
Amazing.
People are like super responded, like in this past year, suddenly it's just like, and it keeps going up like every week. But when I do, you know, when I do that song and dance part, it brings me enormous joy. I'm having so much damn fun doing it. You know, I love the choreography I've worked out. I love bringing people on up there. It's just so, so much fun. And then the other part is when I truly amaze people and their shock reaction, whether it's their face or their voice, that's fulfilling. I've accomplished my job. I've done what I said. I've amazed people. I make them think afterwards. They go out and go, I don't know how the fuck he did that, but he had that thought exactly. I don't know where that came from. And that's really fulfilling. That is just, I've performed. I've accomplished my task. Those really are the two big things. I have joy, and I want my audience to have joy, and I see their fun. You know, when I'm doing my introduction to the card cutting thing, and I, you know, I do that version of Roxy from Chicago, and I'm just snapping my fingers to it and talking with that in the background, I get the audience to snap. I say, come with, you know, snap with me. And everybody does. Everybody does it because they're along for this ride. They want to see, they're amused. They want to see where this is now going, and they're all getting into the music. And when I see an audience do that, again, it's like I'm communicating with them. They feel that they are part of this party. They are at a party, and I'm a great host, and they're great guests.
Felix Jones. Another great guest is writer and poet Brian Sonia Wallace.
It feels so good. It feels so, like, the time pressure of having you waiting there and the knowledge that I am keeping every moment that I am creating, I am keeping you waiting, is such powerful fuel for not stopping.
You can hear my full interview with Brian in the archives at filmmakingconfidential.com or by subscribing for free to this podcast. We'll be right back with magician, mentalist, Felix Jones. Stay with us. I'm Steve Balderson, and you're listening to the Filmmaking Confidential podcast. I'm back with Felix Jones.
There are two types of people who see magic, and there are those who don't allow themselves to enjoy what is happening and try to figure it out beat by beat. A lot of magicians actually do that. But I know a lot of people who just, they want to pick it apart. And, you know, I have friends who have seen me and they're constantly asking me questions. Did you do it this way? Did you do it this way? Did you do it this way? And 90% of the time, no, they've guessed incorrectly, because they, you know, as I learned at the McBride School, you know, you have to make your everything deep. You have to do all of your revelations, all the words have to be deep, that they're consciousness driven, so that it has an emotional impact. And then there are people who just totally go for the ride. They don't care. All magic is great. Even if you're not seeing great magic, all magic is great, because they're just so excited. And so that's, these days I've been, interestingly, at the castle, I've been getting more of the latter, of people who are just there to have fun. I'm not getting too many people these days who are at least approaching me and saying, I think I knew how you did that. And I always have to say, no, you don't know. No, you don't know. Or I'll say, you know, I can't tell you. You know right. That.
Is it hard for you to watch other performers? Like when I'm watching another film, for instance, it's really hard for me sometimes to just sit back and enjoy the film, right? I'm consciously aware of, oh, the camera's doing this. They're moving over there. What are they saying? How's it edited? Sometimes I can just let myself go and watch it. But when you're watching another performer, do you allow yourself to let go? Or are you also curious, how are they doing that? How am I? And to help maybe inform your own work, or either way.
Wow, that's a complex question. It's a mixture of both, honestly. I do want to try to figure out, particularly if it's something amazing. So many times I'll see a performer and I know how they're doing it, or at least I have a good guess of how they're doing it. And so then I can allow myself to look at their performance and how they're presenting the magic. And if they're getting across the message that they want to with their magic. I think really that's how I go into it. You know, however, if there's someone who's doing a method that is beyond my comprehension, and it certainly happens. It certainly happens. I try to figure it out, and then I give up and just go, I'm going to be wowed. I mean, there's so many times that I say, you know, what the fuck, you know, just like everybody else at the castles, because I simply don't know how it's done. And that's, I think, you know, I get a lot of enjoyment like that when people truly mystify me. I literally just shake my head and I go for a ride. You know, I don't try to pick it apart. I give up.
Have there ever been one of those things where you've seen something that you can't figure it out, but maybe it's inspired you to do something new or differently that has led to something else, or an evolution of one of your own, you know, processes that has then evolved to something new or something bigger for you?
Yes. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Certainly. Right now, I can say, you know, which performer. So Mark Elsden is just one of the most brilliant minds in magic and mentalism. And he's, you know, verbally facile. And he's someone that, you know, I look for ways of doing sort of what he's doing. Another who right now is my absolute favorite is Colin Cloud, as I mentioned earlier. He really has a great mind and a big, fantastic presentation that mentalism is never boring when Colin's on stage, because he owns that stage. And every time I've seen him perform, he freaking owns it, because he has this, you know, I think Colin has a theater background. I don't know, but he strides across that stage and you cannot take your eyes off of him. So I see his performance and I am certainly not copying him, but I get inspired to take hold of that stage. That's my stage. And, so I do see certain people that push me. They inspire me to keep adding to my act.
Well, for what it's worth, I love that. I never saw David Bowie perform, but I did feel like I was when I was watching you.
Oh my God. Very Bowie-esque. Oh, that's cool.
When I left, I was describing it to somebody who wasn't there. And I said, it was like watching David Bowie, but different, you know, like, I didn't ever see Bowie, so that's what it meant to me somehow.
I think one of the things is that because of my, there's my frame too. I'm tall and I'm thin. I dance, I wave my arms, you know, so there is that sense of, you know, I'm doing a performance kind of shtick as well. But, you know, because I engage the audiences and I make them feel safe, I never, ever, ever insult an audience member, which is appalling when magicians do it because it's their own failing. You don't insult the audience, but they're trying to get out of, you know, something that they didn't do. I never do that. And so if there's somebody, and people always talk about heckling, how do you deal with heckling? Mm-hmm. And the only heckling I get are drunk people yakking. And I believe I did it on Saturday night to one of the shows. And there were these women, they're a group and they were having fun. You know, I want them to have fun. But I was, you know, at the beginning of a particular routine or whatever. And I think it was at my very first one. I was talking and explaining to people what we're going to be doing. And I just had to stop them. And I said, darling, this is the star. For people who can't see this, of course, I'm pointing to my face and it shuts them up.
Oh, that's so brilliant. Well, and that's the thing that I meant about, you know, the sort of the Bowie thing. Your charisma is so, as you mentioned, big, or it's so loud. You can't not watch. Right. And so that's so good to do that. And the whole, I don't know, it's just, it's so good.
You know, I'm completely unaware of it. You know, I've had lots and lots of video and it doesn't translate to me on video, though I know it translates to people when it's live. But I don't know. I've been told this before. But honestly, I'm just having a good time. So.
That's so great. Now I know that there was that period of time where you were a playwright and you did, you know, work in the theater. Have you recently, have you done any sort of like, have you been inspired by, because for instance, I mean, as I always say, okay, well, how can we turn this into a film? How can we write a book about this? How can we, you know, do whatever? Have you been inspired to write a story about a magician that could be maybe a movie or maybe a play or a spectacle of something that would be
not currently. No. I had a play produced at Malibu Playhouse back in 2013. And it was called Houdini and the Hereafter, Flim Flam Houdini and the Hereafter. And it was a big success. And I devoted several years to writing that and actually worked with a couple of magicians. And as I said, I had done magic when I was a kid. I performed in people's garages and then I moved away from it. And then, you know, all the other jobs that I've had in my life, you know, many of them theater. And so writing that brought me back into magic again. And I had to learn all of the tricks that we did in the show because we did three of Houdini's effects that he frequently did. And so for me to write about them, I had to learn them. And, you know, that was like catnip for magic. It was just like, what does Pacino say in Godfather 3? They keep pulling me back. You know? And that's what I felt. And so one performance, a whole group from the Magic Castle came, and they're called the Houdini Nuts. And I became very close friends with them. And they invited me to join their group because they're all Houdini experts or Houdini collectors. And I asked one of them, so what do you think, you know, should I audition? And the person said, well, sure. I mean, you know, you could go in as a historical magician. You know, you've done all this research, this incredible Houdini research. So, all right, I'll think about that. And then one of them got the president of the academy to be my sponsor. So I said, I'm going in as a full-fledged magician member. So I trained for 3 months with a magician on this particular act and got in 2015, my first try. A lot of people have to go back. That kept me in magic since. I haven't looked back to anything with theater and don't have any inspiration at this point, because I feel like I did it. I did it with Houdini, right? And it's a great play, would make a great movie. If people even remember who Houdini is anymore.
Isn't that amazing?
It shocks me. It shocks me. You know, Cary Grant was a member of the Magic Castle. He was on the board of directors. And when he was in town, he would welcome people. He'd be at the front door welcoming them. And I'm good friends with the founder, Milt Larson. And he's the one who's told me all these Cary Grant stories. And, you know, people come up to him and say, where'd you get that great Cary Grant impersonator? So there was there's actually a poster, I believe, downstairs in the cellar of Cary Grant. And there's a special table called the Cary Grant table. And I don't know if he actually ate there. I've eaten there before. And there's a special lit glass with a photo of him in the center of it. It almost looks like it's a seance thing. It's really cool. And when I was giving tours at the Magic Castle, that Cary Grant poster used to be on the wall of fame that connects the restaurant to the other part of the performance spaces. And I would stop them and I would point out Cary Grant and say he was also a magician. Milt Larson told me a great story about Cary Grant, like buying up the magic shop that Milt was working in as a teenager. It was always, 35 years and younger, had no idea who Cary Grant was. Just looked at me with blank eyes and just sort of nodded. Not a clue. Wow. And so that's why I say it. You know, people don't forget Houdini. And these days, any magician can say Houdini and, you know, people know. But there was also just recently a Houdini movie, right? The one with Adrian Brody.
Oh, that's right. I forgot all about that.
Yeah. You know, completely miscast because Houdini was like 5'6" or 5'7". Adrian Brody is what, 6'2"? I don't know. It's just crazy. Anyway, the very last play I wrote is called Bachelor Hall, and it is about Cary Grant and Randolph Scott. And they're, you know, it this is argued, but there is so much evidence that they were in a passionate relationship for 10 years.
Oh, sure.
And the play focuses on when they meet and then when Cary Grant feels that he needs to get married to save his career to Virginia Cheryl, and the absolute disaster because, you know, he's in love with Randolph Scott. They still live together and she's, you know, the third wheel. Really, it's a fantastic play. It almost got produced twice, but then it comes to the point where we're going, we don't know who Cary Grant is. We don't remember Cary Grant. Who's Cary Grant? And then who's Randolph Scott?
Right.
So anyway, no, it's sad about, I don't understand this amnesia. You know, when I was a teenager watching films or hearing about movie stars that people would talk about or rave about, I had intellectual curiosity and I went and looked them up. In the old days, when you go to the library and you look, you know, you go through the Britannica encyclopedia And then, of course, see movies. I was living in New York and go to art houses, and they'd be always playing, you know, double features. And it was just, I didn't want to look like an idiot. You know, I was with a lot of theater, a lot of film, TV people, a lot of writers, and I didn't want to look dumb. And so I learned who these people were. But today, I guess most people don't care if they look dumb. You know, it's interesting. I always ask how many first timers have come to the Magic Castle. And it ranges from a handful to almost the entire audience. And then I have asked, am I the first live magician you've ever seen? So many people say yes. They've never seen live magic. They just see what's on TV. Mm-hmm. And it's a totally different experience. Oh, when you're seeing it right there, you're in the room, right? So that startles me that people have not seen magic. I guess maybe they just don't have the opportunity. They don't have the venue or whatever. I do a lot of private parties and I get the same thing. People have never seen a magician before. And certainly not one in their living rooms. So it's an interesting experience that there aren't more people that are, I guess it's just having the opportunity, you know, to see a magician and to see magic live. They seem to be everywhere though these days. There seem to be lots and lots. And I think it's just a few, I actually hear people say, I don't like magic. And I go, what? How can you not like magic? It's just, you're just fooling us, which is of course the name of the Penn and Teller show, Fool Us. You're just fooling us. It's just a bunch of tricks. And what I feel from that response that they say they don't like magic is, first of all, they haven't seen my brand of magic. Many times they probably have just seen card magic. Mm. And card magic is fantastic. But there was a study that a really well-known magician, Joshua Jay, put out. Gosh, it must have been 6 years ago now, 6 or 7 years ago. It was a scientific study, and he shocked the magic community because from the study came out that card tricks are the most forgettable tricks in all of magic. They're flashy, they're fast, but if you ask somebody what they just saw, they can't remember. And then on the other end of the spectrum, mentalism is what people remember the most. Because a good mentalist responds to their minds and their hearts. And that card tricks don't. That's not what card tricks do. And mentalism performances, that's what you're connecting, you're emotionally connecting with people. And that's what people remember. And I think people who say they don't like magic, they've just seen perhaps card magic, or they've seen, you know, big illusions on TV or something. And, you know, it's enjoyable. But for some reason, they I guess, suspect it's a trick. So what I try to do is take the trick element out of it. You're not seeing a trick. I am not tricking you. This is for real. This is for real. And you are responding to the reality of it. So that's my, you know, true basis for performance, is making sure that my magic is memorable. Because what's the point? You know, magic should be memorable. People should, you know, Jeff McBride and the dean of the school, Larry Haas, and one of the best mentalisms in the world, Ross Johnson, all close friends. And they all do magic that you remember because it's going deep. It makes the person feel something. A lot of magicians kind of poo-poo that. Just do the magic. Don't do it with all the airy-fairy stuff. That's why they're forgettable.
So when we're children and we have imaginations and we have whole universes in our minds, you know, of characters, and we play with friends in the backyard and we make believe, right? And then as we get older, we're told not to do that. So I wonder if some of those people who hate magic or just shut themselves off to it are also, you know, the same people who say, well, I shouldn't imagine or have fun or make believe because that's childish, or I should be more practical, or I should whatever. or they've been, you know, so buried underneath what society says, you know, you should be and should not be, that they don't allow that part of them to come out, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, good magic should bring out those childlike qualities, so that the people are not embarrassed by them, that they can be gleeful without, you know, this stamp on themselves that you're not allowed to be. I think that's what good magic is. You can bring out that childlike feeling for people, and at least at the moment, they're enjoying it. Right afterwards, they may know somebody put the tie back on, and you know, and I hate to say this, and it's really true, but so many of the time, it's men at shows who are, you know, a bit stiff and buttoned down, and maybe, look, they hate wearing ties, and you have to at the Magic Castle, so that could be a part of it, where they're just not comfortable. But I get great response from those type of men too. You know, they respond, they have a laugh. And that's what I want them to do. I want them to have a laugh, be amazed and laugh.
Magician, mentalist, Felix Jones. Tune in next time for more Filmmaking Confidential. It is totally free to subscribe. And when you subscribe, you'll get upcoming new episodes automatically. And you'll have free access to all our past shows. The Filmmaking Confidential podcast is a production of Dakanga Audio and produced by myself and Ella Spencer. Our original theme music is composed by Kevin Robles. For more of the Filmmaking Confidential podcast, head over to filmmakingconfidential.com. If you have a question about filmmaking you'd like me to answer on the podcast, send me an email using the contact form on the website. To learn more of my filmmaking secrets, be sure to pick up a copy of the book, Filmmaking Confidential, available on Audible, paperback, and ebook, wherever books are sold. I'm Steve Balderson. Thanks for listening and spreading the word. Until next time, keep making, keep doing, keep going.